Genesis 41:1, it says that Pharaoh was standing by the Nile. And the Nile River was the lifeblood of Egypt. And the annual floods was probably the most important thing that happened in Egypt. Every year, the great flood would be the gift to the northeast part of Sahara Desert. And ancient Egypt wouldn't even have existed if it wouldn't have been for these floods. We wouldn't have had the pyramids. We wouldn't have had the temples. We wouldn't have the tombs if it hadn't been for the Nile. Flooding, fertilizing the land. And this is something to think about. Moses came about 400 years after Moses came about 400 years after Joseph. And when the pyramids were as old to Joseph as Joseph is to us. Okay? Does that make sense? That's probably 3,000 years back to Moses. And the pyramids were there 3,000 years before Moses. So the lifeblood of the Nile was working back then. And the floods said, now, Egypt itself gets very little rain at all. They average 8 inches of rain a year. We get that sometime in 2 days. He said, the only place that really gets rain is right along the Mediterranean coast. And when you get further inland near Sudan and Libya, there's no rain at all. And Louisiana gets about 60 inches of rain a year. And the average in the United States is about 39. And the flooding takes place is all the way back up in Ethiopia. It's Ethiopia, Uganda, Sudan, Kenya, Tanzania, and the Republic of Congo. That's where all the rain happens in the highlands. You know, probably a mile and a half above sea level. And it flows down. The strange thing about this is the highlands get about 100 inches of rain. So each one of these countries gets 100 inches of rain all at one time. It happens in 4 months. So they get all this rain at one time, so that's why it comes down. It comes down the Nile. And it did that until 1960 when they built the Aswan Dam. And that all stopped. And what that water does, I was reading something before I left that sometimes the flood water would get 23 feet above normal. So that's kind of like the Mississippi River sometimes, you know. It kind of gets out of its banks a lot. But this water coming down, it brings some silt with it, some fertilized silt. You know, it's volcanic ash and stuff like this. And this is real, real fertile. And that's what they would use to grow their crops. They would wait for some new fertile dirt to come down every year. And that's what they, now, what I want to say is, right here is, I got a couple of tidbits that I wrote down that I thought about. Okay, I'm kind of finished with the Nile right there, but Pharaoh, what he did is when, on the bumper crop, he didn't go around and tax everybody and say, I want one-fifth of your crop. What he did is he bought the crop. They had a bumper crop. Well, he bought it at a cheaper price. And where did he bring it? He brought it to the cities. Why did he bring it to the cities? That's where the people are. I asked a bank robber one time, why do you rob banks? He said, that's where the money is. Well, that's where the people are. That's why And what they would do, they would store this in caves or underground silos. And then when it came time to use it, they got it at a cheaper price. Well, they sold it at a cheaper price. And then I got to thinking, so, well, what happened to the poor people that didn't have money? Well, they sold their kids and they sold themselves to the government. And they worked it off. And whenever they paid for what they had, they were free people again. Okay, I just kind of got that, you know. And we can go in. Any questions on that that I can answer? Okay, then. I think we made it as far as Joseph being put in charge of this project. And Joseph was about 30 years old and when he entered into service. Okay, now right away, Pharaoh wanted him to be Egyptian. He wanted him to look like, act like an Egyptian. So he gave an Egyptian wife. He dressed him in Egyptian clothes. He made him look like an Egyptian. So, you know, later on we realized that his brothers didn't recognize him. And during the land of that was plenty, it produced a bumper crop, and he collected the food from these years, and he stored it. Then after the grain was collected, it was measured out, and Joseph was in charge of this project. If you wanted grain, you had to go through Joseph. And that's when the foreigners would come in. They would have to go through Joseph. If just a regular guy wanted it, he still had to go through Joseph. He traveled around the country a lot. And he never did forget that God put him where he was. When the 7 years of abundance had ended, all heck broke loose. Okay, that's going to put us into 42. And I got a little introduction here. Some time ago, an ad ran in the Kansas newspaper. We will oil your sewing machine and adjust the tension in your home for $1. Well, if you don't understand sewing machines, that probably doesn't mean a whole lot. But what I really want to do is adjust the tension in your home. Wouldn't it be nice to get a quick fix for the tension in your home or any kind of relationship? Tension in your relationship can be adjusted. It happened to Joseph. His brothers sold him to slavery because they were jealous of his privilege in the family. They thought they had got rid of him, but it turned out well for Joseph. He ended up second to only Pharaoh in Egypt. The only thing missing in his life was his family back home. But God was about to bring them back together in the full sense of the word. The tension is about to be adjusted for Joseph, and the tension in your relationship can be adjusted also. The question is how? How can broken relationships be repaired? How can fractured families be brought back together? How can there be true reconciliation when friendships have been severed? Well, if you have your Bibles, turn to chapter 42, Genesis 42, where God begins to do it for Joseph. We pick up the story back with Joseph's family and brothers. Now, at least 8 years have passed since Joseph is number two in the land of Egypt. I said Genesis 42:1. Now, when Joseph saw there was corn in Egypt, Jacob saw there was corn in Egypt. Jacob said unto his sons, "Why ye look upon each other there?" Now, Jacob had seen people passing that they probably had already went and got some corn. Or he had heard that there was corn out there. So he's looking around and he's got all of his sons except Joseph just looking at each other. You know, what am I going to do? I guess it was just a big pity party. You know, just looking at each other, what are we going to do? And the daddy basically tells him, why don't you just get up and go to Egypt and buy us some corn? And Genesis 42, 2, and he said, behold, I have heard there is corn in Egypt. Get ye hither and buy us from hence, that we may live and not die. Evidently, the situation was pretty dire here. You know, if they were, they're probably a couple years into the famine. And I did some looking up, and I found out that this wasn't just a local famine. This was a global famine. Said I'd seen where there was records in China. There was records in Europe, records in South America. All show that at this time, there was a famine. Now, it might have been some global catastrophe, you know, a volcano or something like this, but God knew it seven years ahead of time. You know, so Genesis, buy some corn or we'll die. That shows that the famine was very pressing, since unless they'd buy corn in Egypt, they would all perish. Now, you remember that this was a big family. You know, if they had enough people to destroy a town, you know, you can only eat so much meat, I guess, because they had sheep, they had cattle. You know, I guess, you know, you could only eat. In fact, one instance I've seen where a guy was trading a cow for a loaf of bread. So, you know, things had really got bad. And the fame of Egypt's great fortune had spread. The word had filtered back into Joseph's family that there was food for sale in Egypt. Suddenly, nothing was more important except finding food to keep the families alive. Now this family had not heard from Joseph for 20 years. Then the brothers assumed Joseph was dead now, and they had forgot they had sent Joseph, been sold into Egypt, and the father had been convinced that Joseph was dead. Genesis 42:3, and Joseph's 10 brothers went down to buy corn in Egypt. 10. Well, there was 11 of them that were still there. They kept Benjamin at home. I wonder why he kept Benjamin at home. Because he probably didn't trust the others with Benjamin. I said, would you? But see, he said, well, you know, how do you say this? Benjamin was the youngest of all, second son of Rachel, Jacob's beloved, and the favorite of his father since Joseph had died. The mischief that Jacob had in mind certainly was the fear that something similar to what happened to Joseph would happen to Benjamin. Now, he wasn't thinking exactly that his sons had done it. He said maybe something happened along the way. You know, it's a long distance. Something could have happened. Maybe they could have got robbed or something, you know. Okay, Genesis 42:5, and the sons of Israel came to buy corn among those that came, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. They were going to Egypt, because Canaan is above, so they were going down to Egypt. Okay. Surprising turn of events here. Said Jacob had lost his favorite son Joseph, but not about to risk his life of Benjamin, the one he beloved. These Hebrews would not have anything to do with the Egyptians if they had a choice. So they didn't really get along, but since I need you, I'll use you. And that's basically what they did. 42:6, and Joseph was the governor of the land, and he that sold all the people of the land, sold to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brethren came and bowed down before him with their faces to the earth, without their appreciating at the time Joseph's dream had come true, recognizing Joseph was unlikely, because why didn't they recognize Joseph? He was about 15 to 20 years older. People change in 15 to 20 years. He was dressed like an Egyptian. He appeared like an Egyptian. He spoke Egyptian. And he treated them just like anybody else. And besides, they thought he was dead. The fact that they bowed down to him brings back to mind the fulfillment of the dream, that he had gone great lengths, they had gone to great lengths to prevent. Joseph's dream of the stars bowing down to him had finally come true. Dreams we have from God may not instantly occur, but they will happen if they're from God. Okay, it says, Joseph saw his brother, this is 7, Joseph saw his brother and knew them, but they made himself strange unto them, and spake roughly unto them, and he said unto them, whence come ye? And they said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. And I got to thinking about this and said, it had been about 20 years since Joseph had seen his family. And the last 7 years, he was in a position to do anything he wanted to do. He could go anywhere he wanted to go. Why didn't he go see his family? Said, if you know, I really think that he really didn't care a whole lot about his brothers, except Benjamin. But he cared about Benjamin and he cared about his daddy. What's that? Well, he finds out later that Benjamin is still alive. Yeah, he finds out, you know, because that's part of the story there. You know, he traveled all over Egypt. He went probably all as far down as, you know, the borderline he could get, but he never went to see his family. But eventually, things would come all the way around. And among those who came by corn was his brother. Okay, they didn't know him because he grew up. He dressed like an Egyptian. He looked like an Egyptian. He spake like an Egyptian. He spoke, well, in fact, he really didn't speak to him too well. He was kind of speaking down to him. You know, he was, you know, and well, you know, you kind of figure that eventually he figured that they would come. You know, because if they were still alive and they needed to eat, they would come. And he probably had thought this through. You know, said, you know, how's that word says, revenge is better served cold? And he, you know, he kind of, maybe he stayed up night sometime just thinking, you know, when they come, what am I going to do? What am I going to do?
You know, if you wait for a while and cool down, and just let things take their course, it's a whole lot better. I found that to be true in my life, and I think there's probably some people in here who had the same experience.
You kind of think he had every right to throw him in jail. He had the authority to do so.
Also, it's been demonstrated many times in psychological studies that once somebody becomes very angry, they get very stupid. So, yeah. So that's why when you're angry, count to 10 or leave the area and cool down and go back and discuss the matter in a normal tone. Because if you do it in anger, the words coming out might be harsh and vulgar, and you can't take them back. So it's easier to think before you speak.
You know, and you got to figure the last person they ever expected to be king would be their little brother. He's not quite king, but he's right up there. Go ahead.
All the time Joseph was in Egypt, he was still a firm believer in what God told him.
He was a believer.
So why should he have to worry about going home? Because if he had went home to see him, then the dream wouldn't have been fulfilled. They wouldn't have come bowing down to him.
Yeah, it all works out in the long run.
That's it.
It all works out. Said verse 8, and Joseph said unto his brethren, they knew not him. After 20 years, said he hadn't grown a beard, you know. He was dressed in prince clothing, and he spoke Egyptian. And he also used an interpreter. You know, I don't know if this was part of his plan thing or not, you know. So maybe, maybe like a friend of mine that I worked with, he was a Mexican kid, and he said, he wanted to earn some extra money. I said, well, why don't you go to work at the sheriff's department and just kind of, you know, be an interpreter for some of the, you know, Spanish people that don't understand. He said, well, and it's probably like this. He said, well, I've been gone from that language so long that I don't know most of it. You know, he said, I don't know the slang, I don't know this, and I don't know that. So that's probably the same way by then. After 20 years, a lot of the languages change. Number 9, as Joseph remembered his dreams, which he dreamed of them, he said unto thee, ye spies, ye see the nakedness of the land. And what did he mean by the nakedness of the land? He's thinking that they came to just kind of look over the land and maybe take the corn. Because he wanted, you know, if you come around, if you look, you can see what's going on. And then, well, he knew these were his brothers. This is just part of, I guess, I don't know if he really knew, because his brothers would do anything, you know, so. But I think this calling them spies was just part of his plan. He had thought it out. And, go ahead, anything? Eventually it'll show you it was. And they said unto him, nay, my Lord, but we come to buy food. You notice that? You know what he said? My Lord. He's showing respect like he was over them, you know. In another country, you know, you would call the guy your Lord. You know, I don't know if, you know, what was going on there. And one of the name of the rest, and they each had his turn, denying that they were spies and addressing them with great reverence and submission, calling him their Lord, thus further accomplishing his dream that he was over them. 11, we are all sons. We are true men, thy servants, not spies. I don't know what he means by true men. Honest people? Okay. But he knew better than that.
You have come to see where our land is unprotected. That's in 11 and 12.
Okay, 11. Okay, we just did 11, okay. It said, we're all from a single family. You know, and I guess, said if they were spies, they would be more than one family involved. So here's where he starts to play them.
Do you think maybe he was having a little fun like they had when they sold him into Egypt?
Oh, I think he's having a good time.
I think he's having a good time here.
But I think it's going to get the best of him here in a couple of minutes. He's playing them. Okay, let me see where I'm at here. Okay. Said they were, if they were really spies, they wouldn't have came all to one place. They would have went around different places. Okay, we go to 12. And he said unto them, nay, but see your nakedness of the land that you come. Okay, he's saying you came to spy on us. And then they said, no, we didn't. No, we didn't. In 13 it says, thy servants are 12 brethren, sons of one man in Canaan, and behold, the youngest this day is with our father, and one is not. So he's playing them, and they're starting to tell him everything he wants to know. He said, okay, now he knows that his father's alive, and he knows his little brother's alive. And then they get to start talking here. So he wants to know more about Jacob, and he wants to know more about Benjamin. And then they say, "And the one is not." And then they start to thinking. The one is not, and that's Joseph. They think he's not. I think he's dead. And I think this is they're starting to think about him again. They're starting to think. And Joseph said unto them, that it is that I spake unto you, ye are spies. Prove this. And he's gonna tell them, prove that you aren't spies. You know, well, how am I going to prove to you that we're not spies? Well, hereby, see 15. Whereby shall ye be proven? By the life of Pharaoh, ye shall not go forth hence, except your youngest brother come hither. He's saying, I'm not going to let you go till I see your younger brother. And what's this phrase, by the life of Pharaoh? I guess it's swearing is what it is. That's the best I can understand. Okay.
His ball strength is image as an Egyptian there too, because he is swearing on Pharaoh.
Okay, here it says, by the life of Pharaoh, speaking an oath in the name of the king would most likely mask Joseph's identity to his brothers. Joseph wanted to find out more about his brother Benjamin. Send one of you and fetch your brother, and you shall be kept in prison, and your words may be proven. Truth in you, or else by the life of Pharaoh, surely are spies. He's saying, well, if you don't, you know, if you don't prove it, I'm going to believe you're spies. And so he put them all together in the ward 3 days. He put all three of them in jail for 3 days. And they got to thinking. Joseph was giving them a little taste of the suffering that he did. Somewhere along the line, they must repent for their wicked ways and ask Joseph for forgiveness. 18, and Joseph said unto them on the third day, do this and ye shall live. And then he says, I fear God. And that went over their heads. That should have been a... Because the Egyptians didn't believe in one God. And 19, if ye be true men, let one of your brethren be bound in the house of your prison, and go ye and carry corn of the famine to your houses. So he changed his mind from everybody going and leaving. He wanted to send one person back and leave everybody in jail. So he changed his mind, and he's going to keep one person, and he's going to send the rest of them back. So it's getting a little better for him, but it's still not good. So then they're saying, well, who are we going to keep? Okay, do y'all remember who was the instigator of the whole thing? To get rid of Joseph? It was Simeon. He was kind of basically the leader. So they're getting... While they're in jail here, they're really having soul searching. They're thinking, well, you know, we did treat Joseph bad. We treated him pretty bad. You know, we could hear him scream. He wanted to be let go, and we just walked away and left him there. And, you know, chances are, you know, after being in jail 2 or 3 days, maybe they were screaming. Okay, said on 20, but bring your youngest brother unto thee, so you shall be vindicated. You shall not die. And they did so. Said, now, I think bringing Benjamin back was going to be more trouble than they thought. This may have been cruel, but remember what happened to him. This was not vindication. He was teaching a lesson. Joseph was in a dungeon approximately 3 years, so he allowed them to spend 3 days. He was still concerned about his family, and he sent them corn. They should have realized who he was when he said, I fear God. They were not expecting to see Joseph, so they didn't even notice it. 21, they said unto one another, we are very, verily guilty concerning our brother. We saw an anguish of his soul when he sought us, and we would not hear, therefore this distress come upon us. Before they went out of prison, at least a while in the presence of Joseph, they were verily guilty concerning their brother. And they were talking among themselves, not knowing Joseph could understand them. You know, he could probably still figure out what they were saying. You know, they were talking, and I may be getting a little ahead of myself here, but he's listening to them. And then he goes off in a room, and I think he had a weak moment. He went outside and cried. And he comes back in, and he sends the rest of them off with corn to feed the family. Okay, I read something where it said the interpreter was Joseph's son, but he couldn't have been more than 8 or 9 years old. And if Joseph didn't understand the language, how in the world was the son going to understand the language? But I just read that, and don't take that for the truth or anything. Go ahead.
It could be very possible that the 8-year-old is interpreted because he's the son of a person in high authority, and most likely had a tutor. So
he may have learned a second language.
Yeah, so I'm very certain that he would interpret things for his father if necessary. And kids at that age, their brains are like sponges. They can absorb another language very quickly.
Okay, 24, he turned himself about from them and wept, and he returned to them again and communed with them and took from them Simon and bound him before their eyes. So he decided that Simon was going to stay because Simon was the ringleader earlier. Simon was the oldest brother, and he was a willing participant in the crime against Joseph. Perhaps it was the most cruel and hardened of them all, and appears that he was a fierce man. It was said to Levi, in the sight of Joseph, behold, this dreamer cometh, and that he cast him into the pit. Advised to kill him, and perhaps Joseph might cast fear upon them at the hostage, not only because he used to be more evil than the rest of them, but because he observed he was less concerned. And that's why he decided to keep him. And then the rest of them said, and Joseph commanded to fill the sacks with corn and to restore every man's money in his sack, and gave them provisions for their way, and thus put them on their way. So what he did is he filled the sacks of corn and he put their money back in, the money that they paid for the corn, he put it back in the sack. So they don't realize this until they're further down the road. And one of them decides that in 27, he said, one of them decides he's going to feed his animal. So he opens the sack, and right there as he opens the sack, he sees his money. And he doesn't jump for joy. He is in panic. Because he said, they're going to think I stole this. And he said unto his brothers, my money has been restored, and lo, even in my sack, my heart failed. And they were afraid, saying one to another, what is this that God brought unto us? And they singing, we're being punished now. We are going to be punished. Guilty, a guilty conscience and fear of vengeance of God surfaced among them. Later they discovered that all the money had been returned. So all of them were in a bind now, not just one. Joseph's plan was working. They had recognized the cause of all this, and interesting, the salvation is a free gift. You can't buy it. Salvation of these brothers, the families are free. But don't you know that they're all frightened of all of this? There's no way they could understand what was going on. Look at the spiritual thought through the brothers. See the sinful and dying world, and see Joseph, how God had provided a way out. We must all see that God has a way of working things out. A redemption heart was the first step to receiving help. In 29, they came unto Jacob, their father, to the land of Canaan, and told him what befell them. In other words, they said, man, you're not going to believe what happened, Daddy. Said, you know, said, we got corn, but we got trouble too. Said, this man, the Lord of the land, spoke roughly to us and took us as spies. And they went on and said, they tell him the whole story. And he said unto them, we are true men, not spies, honest, upright men, not given to treasonry and treachery. Said, told him we were 12 brothers, sons of one man, and the youngest was with our father in Canaan. Okay, 33, the man of the Lord of the country said unto us, whereby I shall, you are true men, leave one behind with me, take food for the famine of your household. And just like it is, he said, left one, and the rest of them went home. But he said, bring your youngest brother back unto us, and I shall know you are not spies, and I will deliver your brother to you. And with just a few minutes here, that's when the 35 is when they realized they all have their money back. And to make a long story short, they sat down and told Jacob what had happened and that they needed to bring Benjamin back to get Simon back. And he says, no way. There's no way you're going to take my youngest son. He said, I've already lost two. I've lost Joseph and I've lost Simon. He's already figured Simon is going to be gone because the rest of them are not coming back. Well, Reuben tells him, he says, I have two sons. If I don't bring Simon back, you can kill my two sons. Well, why would he want to do that? Why lose four people? And that's where we are, and that's where James will take up when he comes back.